The third case of the morning is number 054053, Janet M. Marilat against Metal Spinners Incorporated. Mr. Lewis.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Neil Lewis. I represent the plaintiff, Janet Marilat, in her appeal to this honorable court. Ms. Marilat has accompanied me today and is in the gallery along with a student job shadower, Sarah Hubley, and we appreciate the opportunity to appear before this panel. This appeal involves Ms. Marilat was an employee at a metals industrial facility, and she was terminated in 2003. This appeal involves three federal claims concerning her termination. The first is an age discrimination claim. The second is a sex discrimination claim. And the third is an EPA claim. Ms. Marilat was actually employed at the same time with her replacement for about 6 months. The defendant will quibble with my description of the new employee as Ms. Marilat's replacement. We believe that there is more than adequate evidence in the record that would have allowed a jury to, in fact, come to that conclusion that Mr. Ware, that was his name, who was substantially younger and male, was indeed a replacement, and that what happened here, it's our position, looks like a rather callous pre-planning of sex and age discrimination.
Is there anything in the record that would substantiate your contention that the corporation was planning on letting your client go as soon as this other gentleman was up to speed? Is there anything in the record that will substantiate that?
We believe we do. Of course, people come to this world with different perspectives and different viewpoints, but we believe that we do, and I can list a number of those. This case is very fact rich, and it literally is pretty tough to cover all the facts today in the argument. But yes, I took the time to. The first thing is that they gave this gentleman a new and kind of a fancy title and tried to say he's doing something different. And in fact, when you got behind the fancy titles and the what I call kind of corporate speak, they were really doing the same thing. They were doing the same core tasks. So that's the first thing. Why claim that this gentleman is really doing something different if you're not trying to cover something up? The second thing is that Ms. Marilat actually trained this gentleman and was instructed to do so. And again, that seems rather odd to me. And the third thing is that the corporate president said he initially started his job search a few months before he hired Mr. Wehr because he was unhappy with Ms. Marilat. Well, that sounds like he's looking for Mr. Wehr to me because he wants to replace Ms. Marilat. The other element, and all of these items are specifically cited in the brief. I apologize. When I did my reply brief, I should have left the record cites in because I did something a little unusual, and I hope it was helpful to the court. What I did was I went through the facts and tried to point out what elements that they really related to. The record cites, that fact section is laid out exactly as it was in our first brief, and all the record cites are there for these things.
Mr. Lewis.
Yes.
For
Judge
me,
Rosner.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
For me, the closest issue for Ms. Marilat is Ware's education. Is she arguing that her on-the-job experience was equivalent to Ware's college degree? Because that is the hardest issue on the equal pay claim, because employers, of course, are often willing to pay more for a college degree.
I agree with the way that Your Honor's phrased that, and I think that I did not do as good a job of fleshing that out in the briefs as I would have liked. When you're trying to cut and paste, sometimes sure. you miss something. But absolutely, she ran this department for 20 years. Not only did she run the department for 20 years, but again, there's also some pretty reliable indicators in the record that she was better qualified than Mr. Weir to do these things. And the reason I say that, and the court said it's not fair to criticize Weir's lack of good performance after Marilat was terminated because now we're trying to say, well, if the employer just made an error, well, we can't find discrimination based on that. But Mr. Weiland, the president of Metal Spinners, said explicitly the better skills and job skills that I saw in Weir, which would include education, directly correlate to his better performance in the job after Marilat was terminated. Well, you look at his performance after he was terminated, and it wasn't better. The things they call strategic planning, mm-hmm. Which is, I don't know why you call reducing the number of your suppliers strategic planning and why you call inventory turns strategic planning. Inventory turns are very important. The faster you can get that material in and out the door, the less money it costs you in the form of credit money, interest, to hold that material in place. So Ms. Marilat had been tasked with getting those turn rates up, and she did. She got the turn rates to 50 before she was terminated. Under where it dropped, it's dropped to 25. That costs the company twice as much every year in credit to hold the inventory. The other thing that happened under Weir is that the number of suppliers, what they want to call strategic planning, what they say Ms. Marilat didn't do, has gone up. And Weiland, the corporate president, wanted that number reduced. That's gone up. I agree that if Weiland hadn't said the better skill set I saw in Weir is reflected in his better performance, that wouldn't be relevant. But I think that the president made that directly relevant when he said, oh, yeah, that skill set, I'm seeing it today. I'm seeing it superior performance.
Now, how do you respond to the termination of three other employees, all male, around the same time that Ms. Marilat was fired? Were they replaced? And does the record tell us anything about the age or gender of their replacements?
They submit evidence. Well, no, it doesn't. And my position on that was that not that there had not been a reduction in force, but that the claim to include Ms. Marilat in that reduction in force was not true and was pretext. And again, I come back to what she really was replaced by Weir. And again, I believe that the evidence shows she was replaced by Weir. And speaking of that, one more point. When I asked Weiland, I suppose it was a kind of a tricky lawyer question, but what I said to him was, did you ever discuss the wisdom of replacing Jan Marilat? And I asked him that kind of question two or three different times, and what he admitted was, what he said was essentially yes to my leading questions, which of course is a legitimate practice when you're cross-examining, and he agreed with my use of describing this termination as a replacement by Weir. And I personally found that pretty revealing, and that's also in the record.
Now, how should we factor in Ms. Merlitt's deposition testimony, which I noted on page 12 of the red brief, in which she herself talked about her own shortcomings?
Sure, and we all have them. If one admitted human failings enough to keep her case from going forward, that's a tough one. But I think we do have an adequate response for that. And again, I wish I'd have covered it a little better in the briefs. The issue that she was overly aggressive, which of course I find that interesting, that this Olin Weiland was bothered by the fact that Ms. Marilat was aggressive in getting the job done and aggressive with subordinates. I mean, it's okay for males to be aggressive and it's not okay for females to be aggressive. I don't know how I even feel about that whole argument that they were criticizing her for being aggressive. But nevertheless, Weiland came to her and said, stop being so aggressive. She did that, and that's reflected in her In the last evaluation that they did for her, in fact, in the last two full year evaluations they did for her, he said, "You've improved in that area." And all he said is, "As a goal, I want you to get even better at it." So,
how long was he the president?
6 years, and he took it.
So they worked together for 6 years.
They did, Your Honor. And I'm sorry, I really find the poster incident pretty revealing. I think that there are a lot of things that, one of the things I'm bothered by in this case is that they continue to say Ms. Merrillat was not meeting our legitimate expectations. I just find that incredible given the record of her employment performance in this case. And I think that you see what I view as dissembling, quite frankly, on a number of those kind of areas. Why dissemble if you had a legitimate purpose in the termination of this employee? Why come up with all these, what I view as some of them are pretty blatant, I think, pretty blatant dissembling that's absolutely contradicted not only just by the physical record, but the corporate president himself in deposition said, "I have no problems with her job performance for the last 6 months." And I was, quite frankly, a little dismayed by that one when the district court said, "Well, you know, you didn't meet your second element on legitimate expectations." The other one I was a little dismayed by in the prima facie case, I thought the heart of this case really was what were their alleged legitimate reasons that we had to rebut. And I thought that's where the heart of this analysis turned. So I was a little troubled by the prima facie elements, and I'm really not focused there. I'm really focused on rebutting the other items. But to the extent that this defendant tried to say that she wasn't meeting legitimate expectations, I just think that's evidence of dissembling. And I think that evidence of dissembling is something a jury can take into account and should take into account when deciding whether the other reasons that were given should be considered truthful or not. The other problem that I have both with...
Before you leap too far into your rebuttal...
I'm sorry.
I'm looking at a part of the order.
Yes, Your Honor.
It said, Merrillat also had a history of disagreement with her co-workers, and when deciding whom to terminate, Willing considered Merritt's continuing inability to take in supervisor roles and her inability to get along with co-workers. The record bears that out, doesn't it?
No, Your Honor. Well,
the judge was flat wrong when he said that? There's nothing in the record to describe that?
There is evidence in the record to support the...
And then he says the burden then shifts back to your client to prove these stated reasons were pretext. It says she did.
I agree. And those and our position on that is, A, those criticisms were as to events that took place years prior. And
there's no question about the fact you're going to have to cut back on some employees considering the financial condition of the company, right?
I believe they hired Ware to replace her from the very beginning, and I believe
they reduced the force, did they not?
They did, Your Honor. But
well, then start with this: their decision to do so has to be based on some reasonable business decision that we don't get to review.
If it was a reasonable
business decision, we don't review.
If it was not pretext that she was included in the RIF, I agree with that.
I said a reason, not a pretext. All right, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
But you're into your rebuttal time, I think.
And we'll go ahead and sit down. But I would like to close with one other item on that. When Merrillat was terminated, Mr. Weiland sat in the office with her and said, "I'm terminating you only for economic reasons." And when he said that, he closed the door on every other reason they've given.
He's being a nice guy.
Well, that's for a jury to decide, we believe, Your Honor.
Well, there you are.
I think that... And we appreciate the time this morning. We'll see you in a moment.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear now from Mr. Moreland.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, and good morning. I'd like to start off right where we ended up with the appellant's argument, and that is the reasons why Ms. Merrillat terminated. The discussion on her the prima facie case and the elements are very interesting and I think academic, but the real reason here is why did the employer do what it did? First reason that was articulated and set forth is that the company experienced economic downturns that necessitated a reduction in force. Those facts, as designated in the record, are absolutely uncontroverted by the appellant. Even if the court is inclined to root around in the record, they're not going to find anything there.
Well, Miss Merlett has some evidence that Weiland discussed with consultants the her termination and her replacement with Mr. Ware, and that's pretty damning evidence that the so-called RIF is pretext. I didn't see in the brief a response to that evidence, so maybe you can help me now.
I would. That is pretext, and what I want to say about that is simply, first of all, that evidence that is cited...
You don't mean that is pretext, do you?
I mean it's supposed evidence of pretext.
Okay.
It goes to the pretext.
You don't
want to
be conceited.
You disagreed with the evidence. You don't think the evidence is there.
Here's what I say about the evidence. First of all, it was never designated by the plaintiffs in their Rule 56.1 statement. This is a stealth argument, comes in under the wire, and it is a misstatement of the record.
That's what I want.
It's nowhere to be found in their Rule 56.1 statement. You can look. It's not there. The actual testimony that is referenced is the appellant's appendix at page 423. What that testimony shows is that this was comments made by some consultant, not by Mr. Weiland. They occurred after the fact of the termination. It's identified as sometime as July or September of 2003. Termination took place in June. These are comments that the consultant made about whether or not it was a replacement or not. And the bottom line is, if you want to really look at it, the consultant concludes that getting rid of Ms. Merlot was the best thing to do for the company. So I don't think it's appropriate evidence. It's not cited. It can't be relied upon. And it's not in the record.
Okay, now let's go into another area, please. Because the argument about Ware's experience compares to Merlot's is, let me put it this way. You compare her experience at the time she was hired to Ware's experience, but that's not a relevant comparison. We should be comparing her experience at the time Ware was hired to replace her. Now, would you agree that she had more experience than Ware at the time she was terminated?
Well, Judge, if we imply that somehow we were comparing them two different times, I apologize for that. It was certainly not my intention. I disagree that they had comparable experience at the time the decision was made. Ware had been to more than one place. He had been in a lot of different situations. He had experience in supervising more people. He had experience in implementing computer systems and getting them online. The only experience Merlot had was working at Metal Spinners.
For 20 years.
For however long she had been there, that is correct. I think Ware got out of college in 1988. So his experience, just in number of years, I suppose, was actually, it wasn't the exact same number of years. But it was different. And in the mind of the company, as related by the president, he placed value on that varying experience that Mr. Ware had, in addition to the education, in addition to the other qualifications.
Yeah, one of the things... That you argued was that Mr. Ware supervised the entire department. Who supervised those employees before Mr. Ware was hired?
Before Mr. Ware was hired, Ms. Merlot was supervised by Mr. Weiland, and Ms. Merlot had one employee who reported to her, and that was Ms. Stevenson. But after Ware gets there, he has two people that are reporting to him, Stevenson and Merlot.
So she supervised one person, he supervises two, one of whom is her.
That is correct.
Who is training him.
who spent some time in the record showing him the job. That is correct.
What about the higher salary? I mean, just assume for the purposes of my question that we will consider Ware to have replaced her. What would be left of the economic argument, that the economic motive for the was the risk? What would be left after that?
I think it would all be left, Your Honor. I don't think there's any question but that the company had the economic downturn. And whether I don't think it matters whether you say, if you're going to apply the McDonnell-Douglas test and all that, whether you say there's a replacement or there was a RIF, you're going to end up in the same spot, I think, as a matter of law. Now, and that's why I think going directly to the legitimate and non-discriminatory reason makes sense, because you're going to end up there either way. The RIF, the facts are undisputed. As the court mentioned, the inclusion of other persons in the RIF, not disputed at all, and the fact that those other persons are male, and at least in one case, younger than the plaintiff, not disputed at all. Now, plaintiffs are perfectly free to have a theory that the RIF is all made up, that it's a grand conspiracy. But they have to have some proof to resist a Rule 56 motion. And if they can't dispute the economics, the financials that are in the record, they can't dispute that other people lost their jobs at the same time, it's unclear exactly what evidence they're relying on to say there really wasn't a RIF here.
Well, it's a little more complicated, than that. I mean, on her performance, her numerical ratings on her reviews were all satisfactory or better. Now, although the reviews contain criticism, hasn't she raised a genuine issue? Because her numerical ratings and performance-based raises imply that those criticisms were not determinative. And here's what I really have a problem with. Her employer told her that her performance had nothing to do with her termination. That's a problem.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. The termination, the prime moving force of the termination, was the economic conditions. But for the downturn in the company, they're never having that discussion about her losing her job. Now, that's different from saying, once you decide that somebody's got to go, you get to look at the performance of those people. And I think what seems to get confusing here is addressed by this court's opinion in the Fairchild case. Almost by definition, if you're reducing your force, that means that people who otherwise would not be terminated, who might be doing a good enough job to keep their job, get voted off the life raft. Eventually, you've already decided to terminate them and you're just waiting to do paperwork or something like that, those people are performing satisfactorily enough not to get terminated immediately. But when you start into a risk situation and you reach the conclusion that somebody has to go, well, then it only makes sense that, one, people who have otherwise been performing adequately, marginally, even satisfactorily, eventually have to go.
Are we going to find anywhere here in the record whether the three other employees, the three male employees, were replaced?
The record is that they were not. The designation that we have in our citation to the facts it's in our statement of the facts, Your Honor. I don't have the record citation. I'll have to get that. But all the jobs were eliminated. One of them went completely out the door. One of them retired. And the third one went back to a production job on the floor, another job with the company. His position was not filled. If the court were to, I guess, deal with this, there's certainly no doubt that the plaintiff is convinced in her mind that she could do a better job than Craig Weir.
Well, the record seems to bear her out.
Even if that's true, there is no basis to overturn the district court's decision. Because there's no evidence that Olin Weiland, the person making the decision, ever thought that was true. He might have got it wrong. Maybe so. Maybe, if hindsight, it's entirely possible. But as this court's decisions make very clear, making a bad business decision is not the same as making a discriminatory one.
Yeah, well, this is a summary judgment. That's the problem for me, at any rate. This is a summary judgment. And there's no question that the district court read some of the evidence in the employer's favor. And some parts of the case are closer than other parts. But what I'm wondering is, did she have enough here to get this case before a jury? And that's what I've got to struggle with.
The answer is no. Obviously, if you start out again...
Okay.
If you can't dispute the RIF, if you can't dispute the people who included in the RIF, if you can't dispute the performance problems that were documented for years and are the stated reason that she got RIFed, which, by all accounts, including her own, are true. She had trouble working with people. She wasn't any fun to be around. She was ugly in her own terms. Those are the reasons that are given. Now, there's a bunch of allegations and evidence, but it's not any evidence that casts doubt that those were the reasons she got terminated. You know, it's possible to rebut, to make a case on summary judgment based on circumstantial evidence. Absolutely true. But the fact that Olin Weiland never played golf with the plaintiff is not that type of evidence, as recognized by this court.
Could you clarify for me, please, Mr. Weiland's discussing replacing her with consultants again? I know you touched on it, but...
First, that evidence was never designated by Marilat in her...
In the 56.
Yes. It appears at page 423... in the appendix. It occurred, this conversation that is related occurred after the termination. These are comments that were made by a consultant, not by Mr. Weiland. And if you look at what was said, the consultant concludes that getting rid of Ms. Marilat was the right decision for the company.
So the conversation occurred after, not before, she was terminated.
Correct, Your Honor. If the court was going to believe that Marilat was terminated for a bad reason, the court would have to conclude that this company was run into the ground intentionally and lost money, that three other persons, all of whom had the characteristics that Marilat says the company president favored, were let go, all so that Jan Marilat could be fired. That is a lot of theory, but that's where their argument inevitably ends up. And there is no fact; there are no facts to back it up.
Thank you, Mr. Marlowe.
Thank you.
How much time does Mr. Lewis have? Thank you. 2 minutes, sir.
I wrote a note to myself to speak slowly. Now I'm going to have to violate the note I wrote to myself. Thank you, judges.
First of all, I believe that learned counsel first addressed this question to Judge Bauer earlier on the discussions with consultants. He's wrong. It was in our 56.1 statement. You'll find it at record 299, number 21. We cited to the district court in plaintiff's statement of genuine issues in opposition to summary judgment, Weiland had discussions with consultants about the termination of Merrillat and a replacement by Craig Weir, and we give the district court the record cite. So it was in our 56.1 statement. And quite frankly, we think that that kind of statement is emblematic of defendant's position in this case. They tend to say things about this case that we think are not really borne out in the record, and we think a lot of their arguments were like that. And we think the district court, quite frankly, I was confused. I mean, it happens. We're all busy. District courts have busy schedules, and it can be, you want to be able to take counsel at their word, and sometimes that can be a problem. The other thing is I want to also go back to Judge Bauer's question about Ms. Merrillat's inclusion in the so-called RIF. It really is our position that that her inclusion in the so-called RIF was pretext. We're not here to say to you that Metal Spinners was not trying to get rid of some employees at that time, but that Metal Spinners, the evidence indicates they had pre-planned this replacement of Merrillat and then conveniently timed it to include her at the same time of the RIF. I mean, they had her training were before the so-called RIF ever came up. Why are we doing that if he's not her replacement? Yellow means I'm close, right? Not out.
And you're into your last minute.
Economics make no sense. If economics were the reason why you got rid of Merrillat and kept Weir, that's just not true. It cost him $20,000 more a year to run the same department under Weir than it did under Merrillat. That makes no sense if economics are the reason. Again, that's another time where they've given reasons that are just, I think, dissembling, and I think that matters. Thank you, Your Honors. We very much appreciate the opportunity. I would also like to say that this court's staff has been unfailingly courteous at all levels with this counsel, and we appreciate it.
Thank you. Pleased to hear that, sir. Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel in the case. The case will be taken under advisement.